From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 27th day of October 2011. I'm Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity futures with Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. TGM's Matt Bennett will be here to look at the cash grain market with us. And along the way, we'll check in on the ag news, including these stories. The USDA is not satisfied. It has enough information to make a sound judgment on chicken trade with China. And you might remember that a few months ago, the CME Group threatened to pull out of Illinois over corporate tax issues. Well, the General Assembly in the state was moved by the case, and the president of that body has proposed a $79 million tax break. We'll have details of these and other stories shortly. Also this half hour, we'll hear from Lisa Braltz, and it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media from the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished the day higher. Nearby December soft red winter wheat at $6.44 a bushel, up 24 and a half. The March at 679 and three quarters, 23 and a half higher. July at 718 and a quarter. For the harvest month, up 24 cents in Chicago. Hard red July in Kansas City at $7.70 and three quarters of a cent, finished 23 and three quarters of a cent higher as well. December corn futures, 651 and a half, up 14 and a quarter back in Chicago. March at 663 and a half, 14 cents higher. May corn, $6.68 and three quarters, up 13 and a half in July. $6.71 and three quarters, 13 cents higher. December futures, 613 and a quarter, up 12 and three quarters. November beans today, $12.35, up 24 and a half. January, $12.44, up 24 and a quarter. March soybeans, $12.53 and a half, up 24 and a quarter. The May at $12.62, finished 25 and a quarter higher. And then September beans at $12.59, up 29. November at $12.51, up 30 and a quarter cents for the harvest month 2012 bean contract. December meal at $3.23.50, up 6.50. December bean oil at $52.11. That finished a 122 higher. Live cattle futures finished the December at 119.90, down 52 and a half. November feeders at 141, 57 and a half, 12 and a half cents lower. And February lean hogs at 89, 67 and a half, up 2.5 cents. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. Crude oil futures December contract, $93.90 a barrel, up $3.70. Ethanol at $2.73.5, up 4 6/10. Natural gas at $3.52.5, 6 6/10 of a cent lower. And the heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.10 3/10 of a cent, up 8 7/10. The gold futures for the day, $24 higher, $1,746.70 an ounce. The Dow at 12,213, just about 345 points higher. The dollar at 74.8, down 1.37. And the CRB index on the afternoon at 324.27. That's up 8.13 for the afternoon. The weather forecast for the day tells us that in Urbana-Champaign this afternoon we'll see partly sunny skies, a high near 54 degrees, north-northwest winds at 11 to 13 miles an hour. They'll gust all the way to 16 tonight. Partly cloudy, a low of 35 degrees, north winds at about 6. And Friday, mostly sunny tomorrow, a high of 57 degrees. Calm winds becoming southeasterly between 7 and 10 miles an hour. Friday night, partly cloudy, a low of 35. South-southwest winds at 7 miles an hour. Saturday, sunny and a high of 54. Saturday night, clear and 37. Sunday, sunny and 57. Sunday night, cloudy and 39. Mostly cloudy to start the, mostly sunny to start the work week on Monday with a high of 57 degrees. Monday night, mostly clear, a low of 38. Tuesday, sunny and 61. Tuesday night, partly cloudy in the area, a low of 41 degrees. And Wednesday, mostly sunny skies, a high near 60 degrees. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of WILL. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's WILLAG.org.
support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. On the phone line with us, Dan Zwicker at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Dan.
Hi, Todd.
Well, in Europe, they managed to avert a debt crisis, at least for a while. I don't know what you think about what they came up with for Greece and other countries, but maybe you can give us an idea of what the market thought about it and how it reacted today.
Well, I think the world bankers are the biggest need for world bankers are typewriters or keyboards. I think they're printing money. The zero button, I think, is breaking on them all the time.
Well, that tells me you've got some problems with what they've done.
I think that's what it's all about is we have a race to the bottom of who can devalue their currency the quickest and the most to stay competitive in the world market and take care of bad debt. The only thing that takes care of bad debt is more increased currency, and then you just keep covering up. And that's basically what's going on, because when you look at least my screen here, the only thing that's down, you have the U.S. bond market down 3 points here today. And, of course, you've got the dollar down 140 points. The dollar is down against the long-term uptrend that we basically bounced off of back in late August during the Farm Progress Show. We had a low there of 73.52, and we rallied all the way to 79.83, and that was the catalyst of the big decline that we saw in the commodity markets clear across the board. Of course, this dollar kind of peaked out about October 4th, about the time that corn and soybeans put in their October low, and now with today's big decline, we're only about a half a point or so away from a downside objective. I had a downside objective here about 74.13, which would take you back to that long-term trend line that basically connects the May lows and the lows that we had here during July and August and late September. So that seems to be where we're headed, at least in the short run, and that just fuels commodity strength.
Commodity strength, but strength in terms of inflation and not potentially in dollar buying power. Is that what you're trying to
probably tell me? I would say it's mostly expectations of inflation. I call it more of a currency devaluation rather than the classic inflation term where you have a lot of dollars chasing a limited amount of goods. This is basically world bankers are just devaluing your currency right in front of you. So it's going to take more yen, more euro, more dollar, whatever currency you have to buy a certain amount of goods. And that's basically what's going on here. It's a worldwide currency devaluation.
That tells me that owners of properties and goods and products are in a good position, potentially. Is that what you're saying?
That's my guess. My guess is anything that's real assets will ultimately will be the best places to kind of have your money. But, you know, if they print enough dollars, that will be reflected into the stock market, and that's one of the reasons why the stock market is up 350 points too today. You're just going to have a lot of dollars around running prices higher. Unfortunately, the thing that probably won't go will be houses, because we don't have family creation with the high unemployment rate. So family creation is way down. So housing markets in many areas are still going to struggle until you get unemployment numbers down, and I don't see that really changing anything anytime soon. I think the companies are becoming more efficient. In many instances, the companies are just adapting the computer technology of the PC that came about over 20 years ago. So you are beginning to see companies become more efficient with less people.
All right. Turn your attention then directly to corn, soybeans, wheat, other commodities. Will producers of those commodities, farmers in the area, be in good positions if they're holding onto those commodities? Or
I think they're in awfully good shape. Let me see here if I can find some of my charts. I do have January soybeans in front of me here. I kind of view, you know, seasonally, the markets now are swimming with the current rather than against the current. It's not uncommon for corn and soybean markets to make early October lows and then begin their seasonal climb from that point forward. So it's easier for markets to climb higher when you're not going against the seasonal. So they're going with the seasonal, which is the same as swimming with the current. I think today's good close in beans, I would like to see a more solid close above 1245 on the January contract. I think once and if that happens, then that opens up the gate to a quick move back to that high point that we had here a couple weeks ago around 1284. I think that'll hit enough buy stops and generate enough new technical selling to maybe send this January soybean futures up into that 1325 area. So that's what I would be looking at here over the next couple weeks or so if we can get something going on the technical side for soybeans. You take a look at the corn chart, if I can find one here. Mm-hmm. I do have it visualized. You basically, corn's kind of been in the, kind of developed a sideways pattern here centered around 639 for the past three, 4 weeks. We tried to break above it late last week and early this week, but it just couldn't get going. Yesterday, we fell back to the midpoint of that sideways congestion there at 639, and now today we erased yesterday's loss, and we're back above 651. I think if we could get some solid follow through here to the upside on this corn, I think all of a sudden the gates begin to open up for a run toward the $7 area. I've got a 704 objective. But we're going to have intermittent resistance, and it could be strong enough to stop the rally, which is the 50% retracement rally of this BIC October decline or September decline. And that comes into play around 669 on the lead futures contract and around 675. So those are going to be hard spots initially, but if you can go right through them, then we're talking about something around 704, which would be kind of the price levels we were at back around September 20th before we got ourselves into that decline going into the stocks position, the stocks report there on mm-hmm. September 30th.
Dan, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Very well.
Hey, Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group. He's in Decatur, Illinois, and joins us here on the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. You can always hear him again if you'd like on our website. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. There you'll find everything from our pre-opening market report to our closing market report and everything in between, including Commodity Week. We post that about 4:30, or rather we record about 4:30 on Friday afternoons and post by about 6 o'clock on Friday evenings. Our guest this week, Michael Cordonnier on Commodity Week. Be sure to visit us online. Now here's Dave with the news.
In agricultural news, USDA says it needs more input from China on the state of its chicken processing plants before it can agree to chicken trade between the two countries. China has been after the U.S. for years to approve a plan to allow China to import chicken from the U.S., process it, and then export it back to the U.S. Eventually, China wants to be able to process its own chicken and sell that into the U.S. China last provided detailed information on its chicken processing industry in 2005, and USDA says that needs to be updated. Threats by CME Group and the CBOE Holdings that they are considering moving their operations from Chicago after the state raised the corporate tax rate have been heard by the Illinois State Senate. The president of the Senate, John Cullerton, a Democrat, has introduced legislation that would specify that the new tax affects only trades conducted in Illinois. Now that trading is conducted electronically, most transactions are conducted out of state or even out of the country. Cullerton says his legislation would cost the state treasury an estimated $79 million annually, an amount that concerns state Senate Republicans who are calling for more details about the measure before it comes to a vote. Both Texas and Florida are reportedly courting CME Group and CBOE Holdings to move to their states. Georgia accepted today a new proposal from Swiss mediators aimed at resolving a border trade dispute and paving the way for Russia to join the World Trade Organization. Russia is aiming to become a WTO member at the ministerial conference in December, and the border trade dispute is the last remaining substantial obstacle, with other remaining issues seen as technicalities. Hershey, the nation's second-largest candy maker, today reported a 9% increase in its third-quarter profit, citing higher prices and strong Halloween sales, and it raised its 2011 sales forecast for the second time in 3 months. Hershey's expects sales will rise by 7% in 2011, up from its earlier estimate of 6%. For 2012, the company says it expects to be helped by a price increase announced in March to offset the cost of commodities trading above their two-year average price. And USDA Secretary Tom Vilsack says he will travel to China and Vietnam next month in an effort to bolster U.S. agricultural exports to those countries. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey is Director of Agricultural Programming for Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week. Now up next, In My Backyard with Lisa Braltz. This week, she confesses winter squash are a sight to behold, but they're not all that for eating.
Support comes from Common Ground Food Co-op in Lincoln Square Mall. Community-owned since 1974, Common Ground is a full-service grocer featuring organic and local foods grown right here in Illinois. More information is on their website at www.commonground.coop. And from Prairie Fruits Farm, makers of farmstead and artisan cheeses and growers of organic tree fruits and berries. This summer, Prairie Fruits holds a cheese and gelato open house on Tuesdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Information on products and activities at prairiefruits.com and on Facebook at Prairie Fruits Farm and Creamery.
Every kid has one food that the mere mention of, the sound of the word, grosses them out completely. Mine's a verb, squash. Specifically, what we call winter squash. Squash that's planted in the summer, is ready in the early fall, and will keep for months. I hated winter squash when I was a kid. It was orange and mushy and gross. Plus, it was called squash. We rarely ate it, and on those occasions when we did, my parents were the ones who ate it, not my brother and me, and we were big-time vegetable eaters. I think I refused to believe pumpkins were squashes. They were pumpkins. But just to be on the safe side, I avoided pumpkin pie and roasted pumpkin seeds anyway, just in case. I managed to not eat squash for many years. But after we moved to Urbana-Champaign, I saw squash growing in friends' gardens. I saw it at the farmer's market. Apparently, people ate these things. I was fascinated by them. Their color and their heft were amazing to me, but not enough to eat them. But when I started gardening a few years after moving here, I decided to grow cucumbers and melons. Cucumbers and melons are relatives of squash. They're in the same plant family, Cucurbitacea, and they grow the same way, on vines. My successes, however, were few. I'd get a few melons here, a short but mad rush of cucumbers there, never enough for pickles. But the same thing would always happen eventually. The plants would be devoured by vine borers, little bugs that dig into the stem of the plant at the point closest to the soil. Then they eat their way into the vine, killing it. It didn't matter which variety I grew, or when I planted it, or where I planted it, the vine borers always came. They even got the zucchini I planted that one time, a fast-growing summer squash that grew quickly, tasted good, and was not orange, not mushy, and not gross. But it was very tasty to the vine borers. So I haven't grown squash for years. Sometimes it's best to leave some vegetables to the experts, and in my case, squash is one of them. However, preparing squash and thus being able to eat it, that's a problem. You see, in recent years, I've become a bit of a sucker for squash at the farmer's market. In the summer, you have zucchini, yellow summer squash, and green and yellow patty pan squash, all definitely welcome harbingers of warmer weather, and squash that is best consumed quickly. It's not meant for storing or for display. It's meant to be put on your grill with some butter and some salt and pepper and eaten immediately. Squash in the fall is another story completely. They can keep for months, so you can buy first and think about what you're going to do with them later. They lend themselves very easily to this, too, since they're so tempting when on display with all their wacky shapes and deep fall colors. Smooth, pale butternuts still streaked with dirt from the field. Hard, spiny acorn squash stacked Tetris-like. Long, yellow spaghetti squash and smaller, stripy delicatas. And what about those fantastic Long Island cheese squashes looking like paler, flatter pumpkins with extra tall stems? Or those cheerfully orange buttercup squashes piled high in boxes and on tables? Or my current favorite, the downright ugly on the outside blue Hubbard squash with its gray-blue bumpy shell and creamy orange-yellow interior. I can't resist winter squash. But here's the problem. The squash look great, but they need to be eaten at some point. In the past couple of years, I've either purchased or accepted from squash-growing friends squash that looks great, but I have no idea what to do with it. And I've been scared to try. Oh, I made a passable butternut squash soup once, and I probably boringly cut an acorn squash in half and roasted it once or twice last fall. But other than that, I continue to be flummoxed by preparing squash. And that includes roasting a pumpkin for pumpkin pie filling. Why? Is it the size? Is it the scooping of the seeds in the pulp? Is it the to-peel or not-to-peel debate I have with myself? Is it the smell of raw winter squash, which is not one of my favorite smells? Is it my fear that no one will eat what I make from squash, even if that means putting butternut squash with some spicy black beans in a taco shell, something my spouse would surely eat? Or is it my fear that I won't eat what I make from squash either, not even the tacos? It's time to stop being intimidated by squash, I think. I have 3 squash sitting on my kitchen table right now, 2 butternuts and a buttercup. The buttercup, I read, is great for puree. Surely I can find something to do with puree, right? And I can try another butternut squash soup recipe or try my hand at making those tacos. I could also carve them into jack-o'-lanterns and put them on display this weekend, and that would be cool. But why feed the squirrels when I could be feeding myself? This is Lisa Braltz for In My Backyard.
Lisa Braltz stories can be heard on our website at willag.org. Just click on the In My Backyard link in the right-hand side navigation window. Our thanks go to Dave Dickey for his editing help this week. You can read more from Lisa, if you'd like, on her occasional blog as well. It's at majorprogression.wordpress.com. We'll say so long now to some of our radio stations. For the rest of you, when we return, we'll talk with Matt Bennett at TGM in Windsor, Illinois, about the cash grain market.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
It's American Beer Day. Beer is the world's oldest and most widely consumed alcoholic beverage, and it's the world's 3rd most popular drink after water and tea. Some of mankind's earliest known writings refer to production and distribution of beer. The earliest Sumerian writings contain references to beer as early as the 5th millennium BC. On this day in agricultural history in 1811, Isaac Singer was born. An American inventor, he designed the first continuous stitch sewing machine. But one of his biggest inventions was a new way of marketing to consumers. He spent millions of dollars on advertising and made purchasing affordable by offering installment credit. In 1919, Congress overturned President Woodrow Wilson's veto of the Volstead Act, which ushered in prohibition. The act made it a crime to manufacture, sell, barter, transport, import, export, deliver, furnish, or possess any beverage containing over 0.5% alcohol. And in 1920, KDKA in Pittsburgh received a license from the U.S. Department of Commerce to broadcast. But their first radio show, Returns of the Harding Cox Election, did not occur till a week later. They had to wait for the license to arrive at the station. It was the first radio program to reach an audience of any size in the U.S. About 1,000 people tuned in. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. Matt Bennett from TGM in Windsor, Illinois, on the phone line to take a look at the cash grain market with us. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Well, we had a little bit of rainfall, and I suspect that didn't slow farmers down too much, and that, frankly, they might be pretty close or all the way done in your area by now.
Yeah, there's a couple of guys still finishing some stuff up here and there, but for the most part, it's pretty well wrapped up. We're pushing that probably 98-99% done.
Well, I'm wondering, now that we've got harvest wrapped up in your area, do you still have available space in the elevator?
We've got some space. We don't have any space for beans. We have some space for corn. We actually use some corn storage for bean storage this year. So, you know, relatively speaking, the bean crop was probably better than what the corn crop was.
It's pretty odd to have your elevator at this time of year with space available and nothing on the ground, I suppose.
Too. Yeah, first time I can remember in quite some time. Now, we as a company have shipped out a fair amount of corn already this fall, so that has freed a little bit of space up for most locations. But, you know, for the most part, most elevators, especially in you know, the central part of Illinois, I would say, are not going to be full, as a general rule.
You know, we heard earlier in the week a discussion I had with Daryl Good talking about the tight basis and what it really does mean. His suggestion was, in part, that while farmers may be locking their bin doors at this point, that elevators would be taking advantage of the very tight basis and simply passing a lot of this corn through the process. Is that the case with you, and do you think that's the case generally?
Yeah, I think so, because, you know, you got to keep in mind that most generally elevators, you know, a lot of times their bread and butter on their income is making money on basis, on margins. And, man, if you book stuff at option price off a farmer and then we end up getting, you know, a crazy basis later on in the year, maybe 20 under, you've just eaten a lot of money there. So for the most part, stuff that we're booking, we're finding a home for a lot of it. You know, there's some really attractive basis levels right here close to where we're at right now, as well as in other regions. So we've been selling, you know, quite a bit of corn on out and shipping it out, and I think that you're going to find that with many elevators. And I think there's going to be a region 6-8 months from now where there won't be a whole lot of corn sitting around.
Well, yeah, that was my next question, and I suppose that's in large part what the producer is thinking, those who have shut the bin doors and have no intention of moving corn at this point, that if the basis is this strong at right now, that that corn will pass through, and there will be places that simply don't have corn when we get to May, June, July of next year.
I think that's very possible, and I think you could be looking at really, really hot basis levels, especially in certain areas. Like I've talked to you before, you know, we've shipped corn out to areas that we haven't shipped it to, you know, especially at this time of year early on. And so, you know, the people that we normally sell to, they're going to be looking for corn at some point that we may not have, you know, the volume that we normally have for them. So I don't think there's any doubt that, you know, basis-wise, a person could get rewarded handsomely. I guess the risk you take is that, you know, that the price is going to drop significantly on the board, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but that's definitely a risk.
What are your bids for the day?
Bids for the day would be $6.52 on cash corn and just a penny carry for Jan, and then $12.20 on cash beans and $12.26 on Jan beans.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, sir.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is with TGM. He is in Windsor, Illinois, and that wraps up this edition of a Thursday afternoon Closing Market Report.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.